Welcome to the Florida Roundup here from Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, most of Florida's public school students went back to class this week. And for teachers, kids, parents, and state officials, school security is top of mind as another academic year begins, Tom.
Yeah, sure is. This is the second year that all Florida schools are required to have an armed security officer on campus. Now, remember that that requirement is part of the state law passed after the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas school shooting. Yet some schools do not have the security in place for the school year.
Right. More than two dozen charter schools in Broward County, for example, the second largest public school district in the state, say they don't have long-term plans in place for security officers. That became public Wednesday at the bi-monthly meeting of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Public Safety Commission. Pinellas County Sheriff Bob Gualtieri leads that group.
We have a big question mark and uncertainty moving forward. Whether there is a sustained safe school officer presence on 29 school campuses in Broward County. In some of those, we only have a commitment for a couple of days. School starts today in Broward County.
That was on Wednesday this week. The Florida Department of Education says all 67 county school districts in the state report a safe school officer is on campus at every school when school is in session. Now, for most, that means local or school district police. The law allows trained school guardians to be armed on campus, too, but only 44 school districts have okayed the school guardian program.
We're going to begin the hour here on the Florida Roundup with a closer look at what school security means now here in the Sunshine State in 2019 as the kids go back to school. We're wondering, how safe are they? What's on the minds of parents out there? Do you have a child in a school? Do you know if there's armed security at your kids' campus? How do you feel about that? What are your kids saying to you? Let's learn more, and we're going to take your calls in a few moments. The number to join us here on the Florida Roundup is 305-995-1800. Call us up. Send those tweets to @FloridaRoundup. Let's begin with Katie Switkalski. She's been covering school security for WLRN, and she also attended this week's meeting of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission. She's with us via FaceTime. Katie, you know, the commission has been heavily focused on compliance, making sure that all of the school districts around Florida are following these new safety rules. Do they see any challenges with that as the year begins, or have most districts gotten with this program, and are they following the new safety regulations?
Most school districts in Florida are following this, specifically the requirement for an armed school safety officer on campus. Most districts in Florida have that down. It's South Florida where there are still some challenges. And Tom, you mentioned the issue with 29 charter schools. The real compliance issue is it's not so much who's got an officer securing a campus today or next week. It's in the weeks ahead, there are no long-term plans. And there's some loopholes with the contracts that schools are signing.
Katie, several weeks ago, there was a report from a state agency that was concerning a number of parents because it indicated that several school districts were out of compliance about this requirement for school campus security officers ahead of this 2019-2020 school year. Although names were not named, but there were threats that names would be named. Beyond Broward County, were there other districts named at this commission meeting this week when it spoke about school districts and whether or not they had the school security officers on campus on day one?
No, the only schools that were named or mentioned or of a main concern is Broward County right now. Now, there's other concerns in a couple of other counties. Miami-Dade starts school next week, but going into this school year, it's really the county that's been the epicenter for discussions about school security and how safe are schools following the February 14th massacre at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas that's been having the issue. And I think the commission's really found that those issues stem from disorganization, paperwork issues, contract loopholes. And they did specifically name, there's one commissioner in particular, Polk County Sheriff Grady Judd, who was very passionate about calling these schools out. And the commission did name one school yesterday that did not have a safe school officer on campus on the first day back at school. And he only named that school once it was confirmed that someone had sent over a law enforcement officer to secure the campus. But it was a charter school in Davie. So the the number of schools that are having issues complying with this are, by and large, charter schools.
By and large, charter schools. That brings up a related educational issue, different rules sometimes for charter schools in the state. It's 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup as we talk about back-to-school issues and your child's safety at school. Now, let's talk about the Armed Guardian program for a minute. About two-thirds of the districts around Florida are using armed guardians on campus. Let's explain once again what that is and why it was controversial, Katie, when it was first conceived and implemented. And how is it going? What are we hearing about how this is going at different schools around the state?
So what an armed guardian is someone who meets really specific criteria. They were a former law enforcement officer, and they have to go through training from a sheriff's office. I believe it's 144 hours. It's more than 140 hours of very specified sheriff training. And it's not going well, but it's not going as well as the commission had hoped, because when the state created this armed guardian program, they set aside $67 million to train and pay guardians at schools.
Right.
And that is money that schools can apply for and use to have guardians and meet the state law. However, of that $67 million, $52 million is still sitting available and unallocated for more guardians. And just to point out, in Broward County, there's the capacity to train up to 40 guardians at a time in each class. Well, the sheriff's office reported that their last class was only 8 people.
So why is so much money sitting on the table? Why isn't it
all? Schools are not tapping into it.
They're not using it.
Yeah, they're not using it. They're not applying for it. And the commission really disputed some of these charter schools that say they don't want to comply with this safe school officer law because they don't want to, you know, pay for a hefty, expensive contract with law enforcement. That runs around $100,000. But they are not tapping into the issue of that there's money at the state level they can use.
We're talking about school security here as the new school year gets underway in the Sunshine State. Students mostly back to school or about ready to go back to school in the week ahead here. What concerns, questions do you have about school security? Have you seen an armed security guard or a police officer at your neighborhood school as kids go back to school? For teachers and parents, what questions do you have? What are your experiences with the new security measures on campus? 305-995-1800 is our phone number here on the Florida Roundup. Let's begin in Pompano Beach. Michelle on line 3. Michelle, you are on the radio. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you for having me. My 13-year-old currently goes to school in Deerfield Beach at a charter school. And last year we had a Deerfield police officer, but this year they stated that they couldn't have an officer because of the cost was $140,000. And now we're going to have some security guards there. And I'm really concerned that they're not going to have the appropriate training or even compassion that most officers do for children. I'm really concerned about this because it may be just a charter school, and I know they get the funding through the state, but these are our children.
Mm-hmm. What kind of communication are you hearing back from the school regarding this issue? I mean, are they making a plea to parents, for instance, to raise the money, Michelle?
No, they are not. They were just telling us point blank that this was what they could offer us. And that was it. I mean, there's no, like, extra funding. There's mm-hmm. no, I don't know.
Michelle, I got it.
Thank that they're trying to raise.
Thank you for sharing your experience there at Pompano. Katie Swatowski, did you hear those economic concerns voiced by either members of the Stoneman Douglas Public Safety Commission as they're discussing school security, or from those school officials or Department of Education agency officials that were presenting some of this information this week?
Yes and no. The commission's stance is really that money is not an excuse not to have someone or not to have a long-term plan because of what the state offers. Now, there is a third option for schools if they don't want to pay for a contract with law enforcement and they don't want an armed guardian, they can choose security officers and put them through specific state training similar to the guardian program and have that staff their school. And so you're hearing from educators and some schools and school districts that it's a matter of what options they can afford versus what options they want. And so that's why you're running into some of this. But in the commission's eyes, they don't see it as an excuse. They're pretty fed up.
They're upset about it. Lots of calls coming into the show. Jackie is in Pasco County. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for calling in.
Hi there.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a five-year-old. She started kindergarten just this week, and they have an armed guard on campus. And I actually ran into a parent who was upset that the guard was armed and didn't understand why there was guns on the campus. Well, you know, obviously, with the way the world is, I feel like they need to be armed. But the biggest thing is my school also makes sure that we're not allowed actually to walk our kids to class at all. After the first day, we weren't allowed to wander the campus. I think it's also, you know, implementation of those kind of rules and making sure you have those kind of security measures in place as well. But I, like I said, they have to be armed. You have to have those security measures. And the parents who don't want them to be armed, I don't understand that argument.
Thanks, Jackie. You know, she brings up a couple of points, Katie. One being that districts have upgraded security plans in a number of ways, going beyond having armed guards on every campus. We're going to talk about these during the hour. You know, active shooter drills every month, teaching students how to hide, looking for what they call hard corners, safe spaces. And as the caller said, locking up campus gates during school hours, being very careful about who they let in and out. But as she pointed out, she wants an armed guard on every campus. That's been controversial because at the heart of this whole discussion is that we are talking about guns. We are talking about the threat of an active shooter coming into a school, whether it's an adult or another student. And we are talking about the increased presence of weaponry on school campuses. And so when the commission has tried to grapple with all of this, it's been a very contentious process, obviously. What about her comment, Katie, that parents feel really strongly both ways about whether there should be an armed guard on every school campus? How much has that come up in the discussions?
Quite a bit. And it's not just parents, but high school students are actually also making both sides of that argument to commissioners. I think half of the public comment at this month's meeting were high schoolers that came and said, you know, dear commissioners, this is not what school safety looks like to me. Here's what school safety does look like. And so giving that direction, but there's a lot of concern about the psychological and potentially traumatic impacts of increasing this sort of militant looking presence at schools. And it comes up quite a bit, but the commission's stance is, it's state law now that someone has to be armed guarding the campuses, and also that, you know, there's a way to be sensitive about it, but they absolutely consider it necessary. So the parents that are concerned about psychological impacts are fighting state law now.
You know, the other point that Jackie made in that call, Melissa and Katie, that I thought was really interesting was the security manifesting itself on school campuses with the lack of parental access to campus. In other words, you can't walk your kid to school, you know, in elementary school, which, you know, as a father, and I'm sure, Melissa, you experienced this as well. That was a big piece of socializing your kid to school, but also getting to know the teacher. And just as important, getting to know the other parents that were in class. I mean, that's what I hear from parents in the schools that I'm involved with, that they miss that kind of social connection. They understand the security measures and why they're in place, but they miss the ability to connect more directly with the school, with the teachers, with the faculty, the staff.
Right,
unless you go
to an open house, which is a highly structured environment. Yeah. The days of just being able to go into your child's school, it's a completely different world, sadly, that we are living in now today.
305-995-1800, school security as the new school year gets underway here in the state of Florida. In Newberry, Karen on line 10. Karen, you've been patient. Thank you for sharing your thoughts with us.
You are welcome. I want to first compliment the Alachua County Schools and how well they're implementing everything. Yesterday when I picked up my daughter from school, there were two very nice, smiling security officers out in front and watching the kids go home. And I'm glad they're there. But my husband is a mental health counselor and used to work at Meridian Behavioral Resource Center. And every year they're cutting funding. And if we look at the social emotional effect of what's going on, just like we were talking about with kids hiding under desks. And meanwhile, the guidance counselors are asked to do scheduling and implement tests like the FCAT. And they're not being used to help children learn social emotional learning and develop themselves. And that's why I believe we have so many people that are not emotionally developed enough to handle a gun.
Yeah. Karen, I'm going to encourage you to continue to listen. We're actually going to tackle the mental health aspect of school security in the second half of the program with an executive director of student services in Orange County in Central Florida. And we'll be talking more about that. And we'd love to, you know, kind of hear your thoughts on that because you obviously have some direct experience there in your family.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my husband has told me a couple times where there were no services to send to a person who had guns at home and was really ready to use them in an emotionally distraught condition.
Karen, thanks for sharing that. We kind of teed up that conversation that's to come in about 10 minutes or so here on the Florida Roundup.
Right.
One other point, Katie, that I just wanted to ask is this commission recommended arming teachers just to several months ago. The state legislature passed a law allowing that to happen. Was that in the discussion this week as the school year gets underway? We talked about the Guardian program, but what about teachers?
It really was not part of the discussion for either of the 2 days because the commission spent a lot of time trying to put out fires, trying to figure out compliance issues and making sure that particularly the charter schools that were having issues in Broward County were somehow going to make longer term plans. So they couldn't really focus on that because they were too busy putting out some immediate fires and figuring out really beyond that initial recommendation, what their next report is going to look like, what they want to include. And between mental health, as our caller mentioned, between mental health, code red drills, and just compliance issues, trying to form sanctions for schools that don't comply. That took up most of their meeting.
Let's take another quick call before the break. It's Paula in Jacksonville. Hi, Paula. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I just caught your guest in the tail end when she was saying that there is state funds to be had that the schools are not tapping into. My daughter's school used to have a police officer on campus, which I appreciated. I think having a cop car park.
And what is it now? We're about to hit a break. What do you have now? What do you have now?
Yeah, and now it's a security officer.
Just a security officer.
An older gentleman. It's not the same. And so I was wondering, since this is a funds issue, how do I go about telling the principal how to tap into those funds? Like, what can I do about it?
I'm so glad you asked that question. We're going to keep talking about that because, as Katie said, there are funds that are on tap, but that could be the principal's discretion, Paula. I would encourage you to just call up the principal and ask her how she feels about it.
That's what the commission recommends as well.
Okay, there you have it, Paula. I hope that answers your question. Now, we've been talking about guns on campus and school security. In a moment, we are going to continue our hour here on the Florida Roundup with the other big piece of this, the mental health of students. What are your calls and concerns about that? That's next here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. We're talking about public schools this hour as students, parents, teachers all head back to the classrooms across the state. Now, in addition to school security, this year begins with a new database designed to improve the assessment of threats at schools. It's called the Florida Schools Safety Portal. It gathers information from school records, mental health data, even monitors social media looking for warning signs of a student who may be a threat. Jamie Braun is with the State Department of Education. She spoke to the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Public Safety Commission this week.
It's one more tool in the toolbox available to threat assessment teams that gives them access to data from a variety of sources.
A school district's threat assessment team can now search through this database. But the American Civil Liberties Union has called the system overly broad and also mass surveillance. We're going to continue taking your calls about school security here on the Florida Roundup, guns on campus, mental health issues, and how districts are trying to reach out to kids. Call us up with whatever's on your mind at 305-995-1800. Tweets to at Florida Roundup. Let's continue now with Katie Switkowski of WLRN. Katie, tell us a little bit more about this database. Educators clearly think it's going to give them a leg up on keeping kids safer. Civil liberties groups have raised alarms, though, right?
And really so has the MSD commission, because they are not impressed with the tool at all. As a whole, commissioners really spoke out yesterday about how this tool is not exactly what it's being sold as in terms of, you know, truly integrating all of these different databases for more data sharing. And one thing that is really interesting about it, this social media monitoring tool, the state is calling it, you know, real-time access to social media posts. That's sort of a caveat, because there's not somebody physically sitting in Tallahassee monitoring social media posts. What the tool does is it looks for violent keywords, location, and names of schools, and it will pull and store posts. Now, a school district has to want to use the tool and manually log in when they can to see that access. So it's not the as real-time access as some agencies are concerned about with privacy. The other thing to really remember about this whole safety portal is that it's only got information that schools are self-reporting that's already available.
Yeah, Katie, I was going to ask you about that, because it's so the data statewide is so lumpy in terms of how school districts are reporting threat
it's
assessments. And so how is any district supposed to make heads or tails of what may be inside this database, as imperfect as the information? And how dangerous is it that the information may be imperfect?
Well, the commission's concerned some of the information can be outdated, because schools and school districts report right now, they report behavioral incidents 3 times a year. So it's not exactly up to date. And each school district, the commission's found issues with underreporting, overreporting, and misreporting or miscategorizing certain incidents over others. So what one school district considers, you know, a particularly violent threat may not be categorized that way by, you know, some other state data.
Katie, has this type of data worked in other states or other places to successfully thwart, say, a troubled student who has shown indications that he might want to do his fellow students harm?
The state's hope is that this is a way to monitor, not necessarily identify potential threats, but evaluate severity. And hopefully, if someone sees a student that can be connected to further mental health help, that's what they're hoping the portal will be used for. Now, there's really not a state that the Florida Department of Education could name that uses a tool like the social media monitoring.
Mm-hmm. So uncharted territory, I guess we're sort of in here, aren't we? We have Doug on the line from St. Augustine. He's a former school security officer, he says. Hi, Doug. Thanks for calling.
Hi. So just a small correction. I'm actually a former physical security manager and counterterrorism official with the Department of Defense.
Okay, great.
I'm not a school security officer. The point I wanted to raise is that having armed security officers in schools is kind of a Band-Aid measure. What we found at the federal level is that unless you're going to adequately address and correct physical security procedures in your buildings, whether that's access control or, as we call it, hardening the building, such as putting in bulletproof glass or different access control procedures or things like that, then, you know, as we saw with the two recent shootings, you know, in Ohio and in Texas, the police responded in one in 30 seconds and in 60 seconds with the other. At that point, though, the shooter already has access to your building. They already have access to potential victims, and people are already getting hurt. We really need to be looking at, A, making sure our local officials are attending some type of qualification course, like the Federal Physical Security Management course. I'm seeing a lot of these kind of fly-by-night contracting companies that are popping up and saying that they are school security specialists with little or no training. Mm-hmm. Some of them might have been former law enforcement officials, deputy sheriffs, police officers, things like that, but they don't really have any inherent training because, quite frankly, that's not something that the police academy really trains you for. So making sure that the people that, your local school district is contracting with really have the bona fides and the training that they should. Maybe getting somebody in the local sheriff's department or the police department to go through the program at Glencoe, Georgia, where we do the federal program at. And then just really looking at physical security in terms of the building and access control, rather than simply putting, an armed security officer who might be making as little as $10, $11 an hour in school and considering, job done.
Doug, if I may, you make a really good point. It's Katie. What you raise is an issue that the MSD Commission is dealing with in Palm Beach County. And there's a sheriff region of schools that is sort of looking at privatizing the training for these armed guardians. And part of the commission's issues with putting out some of these fires in terms of how security officers are trained is now in their second report that's due out by the end of this year, they're really trying to specify that this training must be verified. It cannot be outsourced to a third-party private company and must be done by a sheriff. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah, Doug, that's Doug in St. Augustine. Thanks for sharing your perspective on this. Lots of pieces to this. So thanks for your call, Doug.
And Katie Swatalski, thank you for joining us discussing school security and the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Public Safety Commission meetings.
Thank you both.
Now, along with having armed guards, Florida's public schools are also now required to teach mental and emotional health education to all middle and high school students. Schools will provide at least 5 hours of mental health education.
Students will learn coping skills, ways to sustain good mental health, suicide prevention, and impacts of substance abuse. They'll also hear ways on how to seek help for themselves or others. Mary Bridges is the Executive Director of Student Services for the Orange County Public School District, and she joins us from our sister station in Orlando, WMFE. Mary, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for your time today. Are the Orange County schools ready, prepared today to be able to have these 5 hours of mental health instruction this school year?
Hi, thank you for having me. For this year, that bill was passed right in July, and so we immediately started planning. We were supposed to have a plan in place by December 1st on how we'll have those 5 hours. We plan on probably starting them, next month possibly. But what we want to do is make sure that we get the curriculum that is age appropriate. So it may not be that a sixth grader would be receiving the same information as a 12th grader. So we're getting curriculum together kind of age appropriately and then determining how we would disseminate that through the middle and the high schools.
It's 305-995-1800 as we talk about the mental health of students here in the new world we live in with additional security measures in place, including sometimes armed guards at your child's school. We'll go to some more of your calls in a moment. Mary, we've heard a lot about concerns parents and sometimes educators have about this new reality. Armed guards, active shooter drills, and the like. What are your concerns as someone who works with students about how this is affecting kids' psyches, their psychological state as they come into school every day?
I think that it's important to understand that, we all see that this world is different and that we have to look at how our schools are being run and how we're teaching our kids a little bit differently. In Orange County, what we're trying to do is just make sure that the communication and the training is there for our teachers and for our parents so that students understand and are taught what's going on. With the active assailant drills, the biggest part of an active assailant drill, I believe, is that if the teacher is very knowledgeable about what's going on, they understand it, they can explain it to the children beforehand so that there's not confusion or at that point that there's fear. So age appropriately, we're trying to make sure that our teachers understand the drills and then the teachers understand how to explain those to the students.
And do you feel that the students are being negatively affected by these monthly drills or not? How do you see the students reacting?
We did at the last legislative session, there were many educators and parents that were asking to possibly have fewer, not every month, for the elementary schools, and that didn't go through at the state. So I'd like to see probably fewer of them. But when you think about it, we have fire drills, we have tornado drills, and the way those are presented to the students, if it's presented age appropriately, then they understand that you're just trying to keep them safe and you're doing practices in order to keep them safe. So I think if we look at these in the same way, then we can explain to students, do the drills, and then at our schools we're being cognizant that after a drill or at any point if a teacher thinks that either a specific student has anxiety or if a classroom starts talking and has some concerns, we make sure that the school counselor or one of our mental health counselors or psychologists can follow up on that and make sure that we respond to that.
We're speaking with Mary Bridges. She's Executive Director of Student Services for Orange County Public Schools. She's with us in Orlando at her sister station there, WMFE. You can join the conversation 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup or at Florida Roundup on Twitter. You're a parent of a student that's experienced one of these active assailant drills. What have you heard about? What's that dinner time conversation or weekend conversation about if the student has gone through a code red drill? What do they tell you about that experience? Maybe you're a teacher who has to deal with this at school or has dealt with it last year at school. Join us and share your experience, won't you, at 305-995-1800. Mary, if you could describe what that basic drill is like. I realize it's different perhaps in the level of school, but what's a basic active assailant or active shooter code red drill like for Orange County Public School students?
Again, it's the teachers are trained, again, before school starts. We teachers go through trainings every year for those drills. But basically, when a drill is called, the students are, they've already been told beforehand where in their classroom they can go in order to hide, whether it be into a corner that has a hard corner or under a table, where to go if they're outside of the classroom, you know, how to get to someplace quickly. So they're done rather quickly. Again, we don't want to disrupt or make it seem like it's something more than it is. We definitely want to make sure that nobody mistakes it for an actual event. But so far, they have been done fairly smoothly, and we haven't had any issues, again, school-wide with any of this. And then, like I said, with the students, we just make sure that the teachers are trained well to pick up on anything if we have any students that show some anxiety.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Give us a call as we talk about students' mental health in the 2019 reality of what it takes to secure a school, or at least do as much as possible to protect a school from an armed active shooter. Let me ask you as a follow-up, Mary, you know, there hasn't been a lot of data assembled on what this new climate on campus means for kids' mental health. However, the few studies that do exist have raised concerns about what this regular focus on the potential of an active shooter on campus, which of course students and counselors like you have to try to do to try to protect students. But the ongoing regular focus on it, the long-term effect this has on students, the, you know, the not knowing if they're safe at school over time, I'm just curious to get your thoughts about that. How much does that concern you? And I need to disclose that I have two children in public schools in Florida, you know, and they regularly have brought this up to me, that they and their fellow students don't always feel that they are safe at school. And I think that's just something that parents all across the country are holding very much top of mind right now. They're worried.
Yeah, I think that along, not just talking about active assailant drills, but I think in all of the curriculum and social emotional learning, even with these mental health trainings that we will be doing with students and with faculty, it's important to really just raise the issue and have the discussions about it, again, at an age appropriate level. But I think that the talk, that talking about it and talking through it is the best way to relieve the anxiety, to talk about the fact that we're doing this just in order to keep our students safe, and that the schools want to keep their students safe, and practicing at anything can help keep them safe.
Mary, let me interrupt and just bring in Lynn, a listener from Gainesville. Lynn, you have a son in ninth grade who participated in an active shooter drill just yesterday, you say?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
He came home and he was, we had already received a text message kind of preparing the parents that this was happening and it was just a drill. But he came home and said that he was instructed by the teacher to basically throw things at the gunman if they come in, if they come into the classroom and they're cornered, and just anything that they could get in their hands, desks, staplers, notebooks, just throw it at them. And I wanted your comment on that, on how it is that, you know, we've kind of turned that page and now the students are being told to actively disable or disarm or distract.
Yeah,
right.
Lynn, I hear you. Good luck with the freshmen there in ninth grade. I've got one of those myself we're bracing for here in South Florida. But Mary, in all seriousness, what do you say to a parent like Lynn who hears that from her student or from her son?
And I can't speak on exactly what every district, how they're instructing their teachers and what they're saying. What we try to do is have the plan of, again, making sure that the students stay safe by first hiding, you know, being out of sight, but telling the students that, you know, having a good plan is good, but then knowing that the plan may change depending on what may happen. And so we don't get into, you know, specifics as much as just saying that, you know, you may have to run if that's a better plan at that point, but always be trying to just keep them safe.
Mary, stick with us. We're up against the clock here. We're going to take a short break. Mental health, the school year underway. What are your questions, your concerns? As a student, a parent, teacher, neighbor, you're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks again for listening this week. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue talking about back-to-school week across much of Florida, we're taking your calls and your thoughts and questions and concerns about school security. We want to hear from parents, but we want to hear from everyone. It's 305-995-1800. Tweets to at Florida Roundup. Kevin in Orlando has been holding. Hey, Kevin, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was calling. I wanted to know how all these drills that the schools are having, how this might actually give the shooter or would-be shooter an upper hand in doing something. It's educating them on how the process takes place. Would this not help them in the event that they wanted to cause harm?
Kevin, I'm so glad you asked that. That was actually a question I had as well. Mary Bridges, as I've been looking at this as we've been discussing it, there aren't a lot of studies on this, but there is one that a researcher did from Hamline University, and she worked with the U.S. Department of Justice on its mass shooter database. She pointed out that about 90% of the time when a school shooting happens, the perpetrator is a student at the school, as we saw in Parkland, for example. So that student knows what the lockdown drills are like. They know what is going to happen if an armed student barrels into the school. They know what to anticipate. And the study, her study anyway, indicated that those drills can sometimes be used to increase casualties rather than make sure that there are fewer. So what about the caller's question? Given that we know most of these shootings take place at the hands of another student, what about that?
Right. And I'm definitely not. We have our police force and our security specialist at our school that may be able to answer a little bit more to the data on that. Looking on the mental health side of it, I would just say that, you know, you're never going to be able to anticipate exactly who or how anybody would come onto school and do something like this. So even with the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas recommendations, we know that, you know, every shooter would not do obviously the same exact thing that the shooter did at that school. So what we try to do is just lower the risk. And we know that by having these drills in place and having plans in place, that that can lower the risk of students being injured.
And of course, as you've been talking about, more mental health instruction, that's one way for a counselor like you to identify students that are not well, that are angry, that are struggling, that are more likely to lash out. That's the hope anyway, isn't it?
Definitely. And I think that's what I'm most excited about. I mean, when you have a tragedy, you hate for anything good to come out of a tragedy. But I do know that the mental health, the awareness of mental health and the ability to train, part of the bill is that every single employee in each district will have a mental health training that will help them on how to identify students that might be in crisis and make sure every employee knows how to get that person to an appropriate counselor or person that can assist. So I think we've been making great strides in just the general mental health of all of our students because of this process.
Do you have the financial resources to do that, Mary? Orange County Public Schools, not a small school district, certainly in Florida. Is the funding there for you?
The state has, as part of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act, there is the mental health assistance allocation. And mm-hmm. It has, you know, obviously we always hope for more funding, but it has really been a help to get more. For Orange County, we've spent most of that money on more personnel. So we've doubled the amount of licensed mental health counselors.
So you've
hired
people.
Yes. And then we've spent it on training and just training as many people as possible.
For those that you're hiring, where are you deploying them? Where are you going? What are the hot spots in Orange County? And what could other districts learn from that?
Well, what we've done is first made sure that we have almost 130 elementary schools. We made sure every elementary school has a full-time certified counselor on their campus. And then all of our middle and high schools, who also have the school counselors that are doing a lot of that scheduling and career counseling, that there's also a full-time person who is just doing the mental health counseling and responding to students. Then at the district level, we have psychologists that are assigned to two schools, so they're about twice a week. Social workers that are assigned to four schools, so they're at a school at least once a week. And then we've got about 30 licensed mental health counselors that can really be deployed. They have about six or seven schools where they can really go in if some intense counseling needs to take place.
Here's a tweet from a listener. He writes, as a former Marine with a concealed carry who was a teacher in public and private school, I think hardening schools is great. More guns in schools is not. He says, the more you have, the bigger the risk of something going wrong. He goes on to say, cops in school are fine, but for God's sake, don't arm teachers. Now, Mary, as you're talking about the mental health piece of this, not that many districts have moved ahead with the state option to arm teachers in the classroom. Most educators, in fact, spoke out pretty strongly against that notion. How do you see the impact of armed teachers, the mental health piece of that, the psychological impact of that on kids? Although few teachers are going ahead with that option.
Yeah, our district as a whole, our school board has gone on record to state that they are not for arming teachers. And for my own personal belief on that is I see our teachers and we are asking our teachers to do so much on a daily basis. And I see their stress and their anxiety that, you know, is going up even as we're doing this mental health training and now, you know, asking them to be more aware of their students' mental health. I just can't imagine asking a teacher to also be feeling like they're responsible for that type of response to the safety of their kids.
You see it as increasing the stress for both the students and the teachers, it sounds like.
Absolutely. And again, that's my personal opinion on that, that it just... I do understand that there may be some teachers that have military training or have police training and they may be comfortable with having a weapon, but I just don't see that that's something that would benefit.
But similar to this idea of defensive maneuvers or offensive maneuvers in these cases, what we heard from the parent in Gainesville was her freshman in high school was being taught during these active assailant drills to take an offense, to throw things at an active assailant.
Yeah, again, I'm not completely sure of the entire training that they have up in Alachua. But, I would say that we see things, and as you look at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas and you see some of these acts that are going on around the country, and you say, well, if they were aggressive, if they did become offensive, then maybe less lives would have been injured. But I still feel like, especially at the school, that you want to, your first reaction should be to make sure you're keeping the students safe and away from the shooter if possible. And so I don't think that you need to be overly training people to be aggressive.
This is the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Lisa is in Gulfport, Florida. Hi, Lisa. Thanks for calling the show. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm just thinking that police officers and security guards and resource officers should all be trauma-informed. I was working down in South Florida at a camp in Coral Springs, and a police officer entered the room, totally didn't explain why he was there, had a gun, left the room. It was pretty ominous, and I just feel like they all need to be trauma-informed so they understand what kind of impact their presence has on the kids.
Thanks for that. Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, Mary, she really touches on some points that have been made earlier in the show. Trauma-informed response for people that are dealing in the schools with students in this new armed environment. What are your thoughts about that?
I'm a huge proponent for trauma-informed schools. So I think anyone, not just the police officers, I feel like everybody in every school, from the secretary at the front office to the custodian to everyone, needs to have some trauma-informed training. In Orange County, for our school resource officers, what we've done is our school resource officer, our mental health designee, which is normally that counselor on the campus, and an administrator, we really kind of have them as a team, and we've been getting them the additional training for youth mental health first aid, which again gives that resource officer a little bit more training on how to deal with students, how to deal with trauma, and then actual trauma-informed care training also.
Mary, what about any differences in training at the school level with teachers and student mental health and different communities' experiences with law enforcement, with firearms, and with violence?
In Orange County, we have 9 different municipalities, so our resource officers come from different city police forces and the county sheriffs, and we see different cultures of even how those units work in the schools, and so we've been really, again, trying to do as much training as possible with our resource officers and our law enforcement, as well as with our teachers and staff at the school, so that if a student, as the caller said before, if a student's coming in and they already have trauma, if, you know, when they're at home, they're seeing things that they have their anxiety, sometimes school is their only safe place. So you want to make sure that you know how to work with a student like that and make sure that you're not adding to their anxiety, because school may be the only place that they feel safe.
That's a sad commentary, isn't it, on the lives of so many kids out there. But I have to thank you, Mary, for sharing your time and insights with us, because you are like so many hundreds of other school employees all over this state, working so hard under really challenging circumstances to educate students, to protect students, to counsel students. So, kudos to you. And thank you so much for sharing your perspective with the state of Florida on this really important issue here as the school year kicks off. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, Mary Bridges, Executive Director of Student Services, Orange County Public Schools, with us. And that's our show today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. I'm in North Florida, not South Florida.
It was the first week of school for you in North Florida. School starts in South Florida and Dade County next week, so we're all messed up too. Heather Schatz, Denise Royal, the producers, Jason Zabka, the director of radio programming, our technical director, director of radio operations is Peter Meritz, engineering with Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Brady Corum. Music provided by Aaron Libos. I'm Tom Hudson.
I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be back next Friday at noon.